Football is back, and right now, Bet365 offering a wide range of markets, including first, last, or anytime goal scorers. With over 45 million members, it's the world's favourite online betting company. We've got wall-to-wall Premier League football, with games being played nearly every day, and with Bet365 Bet Builder, you can combine match results, players to score, number of goals, and more to create your own personalised bet. And if you can't watch all the games live, with Bet365's Match Live feature, you can follow every moment through graphics and text. A bit like watching teletext for the results when I was a kid. Bet365 is the world's favourite online sports betting company. The app can be downloaded from Google Play and the Apple App Store. Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, brought to you by The Athletic. This is a podcast all about Newcastle United, and football is back, officially. Project Restart has restarted, I suppose. and Newcastle were back with a bang against Sheffield United on Sunday, and then continued with a bit of a wet fart against Aston Villa tonight. Chris Woff, Sergeant Waffles, Uncle Wafflington, he was there in all of his glory in the stupefying heat of St James's Park. Chris, how was it? How are you?
I'm all right now that the game's over and I'm back home, because it was compared to Sunday, it was fairly turgid. I mean, Sunday for 45 minutes wasn't great either, but the second half was actually enjoyable, which is strange that you can actually enjoy the last 20 minutes of a game because Newcastle was so comfortable. But today, it was certainly first half. Newcastle really looked like they lacked energy. I mean, the heat certainly didn't help. It was very, very hot at St James's Park, about 23, 24 degrees. You can see where these June fixtures are completely different to what Premier League footballers will be used to. This is Newcastle haven't played, I think it was 47 was the last time Newcastle played a June league fixture. And wow. You could just tell that players of both sides were struggling a little bit to the conditions, and also the volume of football. It was Villa's third game in a week. Newcastle have another game on Sunday, obviously a huge game coming up, and have 10 games to navigate in the space of about 6 weeks. And really the conditions and the volume of matches, I think, unfortunately, we may have to get used to a few halves of football like we've seen so far, which haven't been ideal.
Oh, well, Chris, he only asked how you were.
He didn't. He also asked how the game was.
Oh. Anyway, you all right, George? How are you doing? Are you okay?
Well, I'm all right. Yeah, no, that was music to my ears, actually. It was sort of that turgid. The use of the word turgid in relation to Newcastle, that's just beautiful, poetic music to my ears. Because
familiarity is back.
Yes, and I said this on Twitter. It's like Newcastle are so bad, it's just beautifully reassuring that all in this crazy, mixed up, mad world of ours, that so much has changed and so much will never be the same again, that Newcastle United can just be perfectly turgid. So I was sort of quite happily reassured by that. I mean, it was frigging awful.
Yes, it was.
Particularly for the first half. And Chris is right. I'm sure this is going to be a sign of things to come. But it was kind of, we're back. We're turgid.
We absolutely are. We're back. I mean, let's be honest though. It's 4 points out of two games from the restart. Are we happy with that? Is that the kind of start we were looking for, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's a very good start. I know it's two home games, but one of them's against a team who we talked about as Champions League contenders just about a week ago. I know they've had an awful week, really, including against Newcastle. But Sheffield United came to Newcastle, and I think a lot of people fancied Sheffield United. And then Villa.
I mean, it helps that they had 10 men for a lot of the game, doesn't it, Chris? You know, Aston Villa weren't as courteous to us today. They didn't want to play with 10 men, which is just not fair, is it, really?
No, they didn't. But I have to be honest, I was disappointed with Sheffield United in general in the first half on Sunday. I thought for a team who have been built on high energy, not giving the opposition room, smothering them, I thought that they looked quite lethargic. I don't think they've come back at all the same side, and I think that a lot of people who watch more Sheffield United than me have said likewise. And although Newcastle weren't great during the first half of that match, I thought even the 10 men certainly changed the game, but I just felt Newcastle was starting to get a grip on the match that during the start of that second half, and in the end it was comfortable. I mean, that was what was more surreal almost than being inside an empty St James's Park, was that for the final 20 minutes of the game you knew Newcastle were going to win, and I cannot remember the last time that has happened. And so as surreal as the whole day was, that was probably the strangest moment on Sunday.
Yes, I mean the big picture. And all joking aside, 4 points from these first two games is massive, and that is enough. You know, that's enough. I mean, we've sort of
think that's all safe now, George.
I'm sure it is. And that the first game, in terms of, you know, we'll come on and talk about it a bit more, I'm sure. But just in terms of that 3 points, if nothing else, I was so, you know, I'd kind of worked myself up into a state of sort of nervousness. Before then, you know, we talked about this a bit. It's like I am of the kind of character who looks at those fixtures and thinks, no, we won't win that one or that one or that one or that one. And then, Jesus Christ, we're in crisis. And Sheffield United would come into that all guns blazing. I just thought that they would. And I thought that was a really tricky first fixture. And although, yeah, Villa has not been great, 4 points from those two games is really good, is a really good return. And it's, we're not talking about Liverpool or Barcelona here, but in the context of Newcastle's very strange season and very difficult season in lots of ways, that's a really big 4 points.
It's been strange, hasn't it? I mean, I think one of the words I would have used for this evening's performance was leggy. I think there was a time when we looked leggy, and not in a kind of the woman that Rod Stewart would be dating, not that kind of leggy. I mean, sort of looking knackered. I thought after about 40 minutes, I thought, we do look, some of us look like we are blown out of our arses here after 40 minutes. It was a bit concerning, Chris. Do you think the fitness is going to be an issue?
Well, I think that's going to be an issue for all teams. Yeah, they've had 3 months without football, and although they've all been staying very fit, they've been doing cardio, obviously all of these fitness programs have had. But
they've had a massive rest, Chris. Why? How can they be tired?
No, but you lose match fit. You lose
I'm
match
doing
fitness.
A joke. That was a joke. That was my joke about tiredness. Come on. They've had 3 months off. Come on.
It's good, George, but I wouldn't open with it if I was you.
All right, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Just trying to lighten things. I'm trying to lighten things a bit. Fine, I'm not bothered. Get back in your box.
I mean, the really big positive, I think, from the last two games has been Alan Saint-Maximin.
My word, yes.
I mean, tonight I thought first half he flattered to deceive a little bit. They were putting two men on him, and he sort of looked a bit like he wasn't overly interested first half. I don't know if that came across on the TV, but there's points where it just looked like, oh yeah, I'm going to let him on. Whereas on, particularly against Sheffield United, what really impressed me about him was that whatever he did seemed to be more incisive. He was actually, rather than doing his tricks and flicks or whatever and maybe running down blind alleys and trying to beat three men unnecessarily when he could just pass the ball, it looked like he was always trying to move the ball forward, to do something productive, to have that effect. And second half today, I thought the same as well. And he looks lean. He looks like he's come back in that real form. And if Newcastle had any chance against Manchester City, then Alan Saint-Maximin attack's going to be crucial, because whenever he gets the ball, you can see the opposition are worried, whereas for the rest of it, when the other Newcastle players get the ball, you can see it's always a bit ponderous, a little bit slow, where Saint-Maximin just seems to have that dynamism.
I'm worried when the rest of the team get the ball. That's another joke.
That's good, George, yeah. That's
doesn't
two
feel
now.
Like it's going very well. It doesn't feel like it's going very well, the jokes. I might stop. I might just get angry and grumpy again.
Oh, God. What I will say, just before we go any further, is if you are tired of George's jokes and you wish to take a little break, sign up today for a 40% discount on The Athletic simply by visiting theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and enjoy the best football writing and ad-free podcasts just as the Premier League returns. And that's less than £3 a month, and you can cancel at any time. That's not even as much as what you spend on sausages, Chris. That's an absolute bargain.
It is an absolute bargain. I mean, given all of the content we've had recently, I would particularly point people towards, and I know it isn't Father's Day anymore, but George's piece from last Sunday.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes. I'll be honest with you, George, I've got to give you a mild bollock in here for that, because I clicked on that thinking, oh, Father's Day, it's going to be nice, easy read. Father's Day, Sunday morning, lying in bed, my kids had made me breakfast in bed, and I'm lying there, and I thought, I'll just read this, and I had a look, and within 5 minutes, I was in floods of tears. So thank you for that.
Well, I have to be careful, because I don't want to get emotional, but I'll have to stop doing jokes.
It was
now,
beautiful.
So that's a bit annoying. Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been a tough time. So the fella, my stepdad, who first took us to St James's Park when I was 8, many many decades ago, has had coronavirus, and came out of hospital after 10 weeks in which he'd been in intensive care three times and had pneumonia three times, and is now home, which is incredible. It's not something that at various points we thought would happen, and there were some very, very dark moments. I mean, obviously for him more than anybody else, but for the family too. And so I kind of wanted to find some way of kind of expressing my emotion, and the way I can sort of do that really is by writing. And it's made me think a lot more about, I mean, we're all thinking about football when there's no fans in the stadium, and we're all thinking about football when there's no, you know, football full stop. And then with the kind of limbo of that and the limbo of sort of everything else, it was, I kind of wanted to write about what he meant to me and all that. And obviously with it being Father's Day and Newcastle's first game back after lockdown, that seemed like a good reason to celebrate his homecoming. But
absolutely.
The funny thing was, I went to see him on Father's Day. There was a mild panic in the morning because he was really looking forward to watching the match, and his Sky went on the blink. So there could have been a slightly different ending to that story. But anyway, he got it working and was very, very pleased with the win.
Fantastic. I mean, if you haven't read that and you are listening, I implore you to go and have a look at that on the website. It's absolutely wonderful piece of a wonderful piece of writing. Let's go back to the game anyway. Chris, you've been in the stadium for those two games, haven't you? What's it like in the stadium inside St. James's Park without the fans there? I can imagine all you can hear is Matt Ritchie bollocking everyone within 5 yards of him. But what's going on? Like, what's it like inside the stadium?
Well, there is only one way you can get into the stadium when you arrive now. So there is the three zones to the stadium. So there's a green zone, which is basically where you drive up to the side of the stadium, and now
sounds
we
like
would
Crystal
park
Maze
them at the multi. Yeah, oh yeah. And, I mean, it's not as fun as the Crystal Maze. Unfortunately, there's no Aztec zone or anything like that. But
Lee Charnley stand in a corner playing the harmonica for you. Yeah. Sounds great.
You pull into the car park, and on your way in, you checked on the way in terms of to see that you are one of the three. There's only 300 maximum personnel allowed into the stadium, and then you have to enter through what is essentially the Millburn reception and go up to level 6, having been temperature tested on the way in. You've got to fill in a questionnaire, health questionnaire. You've got to be wearing a face mask the whole time. And so we, as the written media, have actually been moved for social distancing purposes. So the press box itself has the radio personnel. So we're actually further back in this. We're further up on level 6, watching it from a different view. So I'm getting a different perspective to I usually would. It's very good for sort of, I was going to say it's very good for a tactical perspective, but it really wasn't tonight because it was just awful. But it's
better. You see how bad things are from a distance.
Yeah, to see things from above. But in terms of the hearing the players, I mean, you can hear Matt Ritchie from there. You can hear other people, but just it's sort of muffled shouting. But you can hear Matt Ritchie just bollocking all of his teammates and just shouting constantly all the way Brilliant. Through. I mean, he is just incessant. It's exactly
you
what
hear
you
him
need.
In
he's, he is the driving force.
Yeah, I was going to say you can hear him from my front room. That's without the telly on.
It was I sort of had a rose tinted second half view, obviously on Sunday, and it didn't seem quite as bad. Obviously, it was awful that there weren't fans in there, but then you leave and you think, oh, Newcastle have won 3-0, so you sort of have a positive slant. But then tonight was sort of the full experience of what it's like to not have supporters. Because in those lull moments, the moments when the ball's out of play, they feel so much longer because there isn't any atmosphere there. There's no noise. There's nothing going on at all. You don't have fans to give you that, to give the energy to the game, to give it that real buzz. And so it was, for example, when the game kicked off tonight, for the first kickoff, you sort of just, it feels like an anticlimax because you expect noise, and instead there's just there's just silence as soon as the whistle goes and the ball gets played. So, I mean, I don't need to tell everyone that it's surreal and it's not the same, and really is missing supporters, as Steve Bruce and everyone else has rightly said. But we recognise how privileged we are as the media to be in there when obviously fans can't be, but I hope that fans can return soon, because it really isn't the football that we know and love.
I've noticed the difference with the actual commentators on the TV as well, listening to the commentators commentating on the game. Now, you'd think that wouldn't be any different, but I've got a feeling the anticipation, the excitement of the crowd actually you know, that bleeds over to the commentator and he gets swept up in all that excitement. And I was watching Match of the Day the other day, and I just, one of the commentators went, oh, yeah, it's a goal. Oh, nice one. And it was like, oh, come on, man, it's a goal, you know. Somebody's going to be really happy about this, but it doesn't seem to be you. So it was, yeah, I think it's been really weird, George. How have you felt watching it? Have you felt that it's been an alien experience to you? Is this football as you know and love it?
Well, even the fake crowd needed the team to get them going tonight, yeah. And that didn't happen. I was obviously watching BT Sport, and the fake crowd noise was incredibly faint. I couldn't work out how to turn it off or to find the right channel.
Yeah.
Some plus HD plus extra large plus, yeah, whatever. And but it was so quiet it didn't actually matter. So I hate the fake noise, actually. I know some people like it or prefer it. It's already fake enough. I mean, the experience is already fake enough without making it more fake, I think. So I'd prefer to just have the silence, because at least that's real. No, I mean, it's exactly, you know, it's exactly sort of what I thought. I mean, my opinion hasn't changed. I hate it. As I said in the piece about my stepdad, by the end, I was just so happy that he was home and looking forward to watching the match that I wanted them there to play. And, you know, it is, I think it's sort of a relief for all of us to have football to talk about and think about and something else. But in terms of the experience, I just think it shows exactly why fans are and should be and must always be the integral part of the whole experience, because it's just it's awful without it. And no, the commentators, you know, their voices rise and fall as a crowd do. And I love listening to Radio 5. I still love, you know, that old, you know, that idea of kind of huddling around the wireless and things like that. And I love the commentators that sort of BBC have. But, you know, they're at their best when they're having to sort of roar to make themselves heard above the noise, and they're reflecting the emotion and the passion and the sound that's coming through. And, you know, this is why football stadiums need to be full. This is why people need to be there, because it's actually the fans who respond to the drama and add to it, and players play up to the crowd, and managers, it's all, you know, so much of the game is about pantomime. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean that in a very affectionate way. It's about this sense of performance and putting on a show, or, you know, whatever it is, or making a tackle, and everyone, you know, everyone kind of responds to it. And so it's just, it's very different, and it's, you know, I don't like it. And I hope that, yeah. I mean, I've hoped a lot of things during lockdown, which I don't suppose are going to happen. But you know, you sort of hope that this reminds people why the supporter should be absolutely treated as the most important kind of player in the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned Alan St-Maximin earlier on. Chris, you were there tonight. Was there any other players from Newcastle who stood out to you tonight? Was anybody else playing above themselves?
I thought that John Joe Shelvey at times was the one who was trying to probe and sort of spread the play, and he can be frustrating, but I thought that he was the one who really just made that switch up in tempo at times. And you can see he is playing some good football under Steve Bruce, and he is sort of really playing with confidence under him. But I thought that the player who made a big difference when he came on actually was Andy Carroll. And I mean, he doesn't
George
move.
Is having a little wry chuckle there.
He is static. He is very much static, but he just brings that focal point. And I actually thought Joelinton over the last couple of games has done a fair bit right. I know I know finishing wise, not great, other than the goal against Sheffield United. But when Carroll comes on, you suddenly, I mean, the ball's almost, it just seems like it's attracted to him. And so I know Newcastle go long, and I know it's frustrating, but he also. Yeah. Then it seems like there is something for the Newcastle players to play off. It feels like, it just feels there's more shape. It probably doesn't come across that way on TV, but when you're in the ground, suddenly it feels. And Villa's defenders were concerned about him. It was actually a brilliant pass as well for Dwight Gayle's goal. So
it was superb. Absolutely. I know it's a cliche, but you know, like the good feet for a big man thing. His touch is really good. He can stop the ball dead and then put it where he wants it. I thought he looked pretty decent tonight when he came on.
He swaggered on as if he just stepped off a set of a niche trucker porno.
He looked like Lemmy off Motorhead, didn't he?
He looked, well, oh, right, fine. Lemmy off Motorhead, niche trucker porn set. I nearly said that on Twitter, and then I kind of thought twice about it and thought, no, maybe I'll get sacked if I do that. So maybe I shouldn't say it on here either. But anyway, fuck it, I've said it now. So, and it's that thing where he just knows where to be. He can't always get there because he can't move, but he knows where to be, and he knows. And the same, of course, applies to Dwight Gayle. And I'm not having a go at Jolinton, but I am making the point that he just doesn't know where. I mean, he's got pace and he's got power and he's got the things that you want, but he does not have the instinct. He does not have that instinct. And we saw that in the first half, or, you know, we certainly saw it in the way the team was set up in the first half when ASM got down the right and whipped in that brilliant ball.
Flashed that ball across to me.
And there was no one there to, you know, pushing for it or challenging it or whatever. And Carroll does make a difference. At the same time, you know, I watch him and sort of think, you know, God, that he is so, he's just so static, but he knows how to win the ball and he can get the ball in the air and he can make it. And Chris is right. He did make a difference. And it was a great pass for the goal. And Gayle, had that finishing touch. And, you know, they've got away with it this season. Thank goodness they have. But, you know, it's amazing what a difference it makes to have a proper centre forward on the pitch.
Chris, did you see that stat that was flying about tonight on Twitter where it said Andy Carroll has more assists in his last 8 games than Mesut Ozil does in the last 2 years?
I hadn't seen that. No.
How do you get your head around that? How do you reconcile that in your brain? That's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's strange because you watch him and you just think, how could someone that immobile be effective? But he is, and the frustration is just that obviously the fragility of his body and the fact that you know that he's likely to break down, unfortunately, at various points. But when Bruce says, and I know people get a wry smile when they do it, but when Bruce says a fit Andy Carroll would improve more squads, I think 12, 13 teams in the Premier League probably would take him as a sort of third or fourth striker in that sense, if you can get him fit. But that is the big question, which has always been with them. But for Newcastle, given the lack of goals and the lack of forward options they have, I can see the logic in keeping him on for another year, even if it is that he only plays a handful of games next season, just as a third or fourth choice. He certainly wouldn't want to be relying on him, but I do think he is that different option as well. That battering ram, you bring him on and you go route one if needs be. And he's very different to Joe Linton, but I also think in many ways he's more effective, certainly in the latter part of matches.
So, unfortunately, Chris, you're going to have to leave us now, aren't you? Because you've got some bits and pieces to do. And me and George are going to continue on and talk stuff about you behind your back while you're not here. How does that sound?
That sounds plausible and likely. Yeah.
Sounds likely. Can't wait.
So, Chris, just before you go, I just want to play this for you, mate.
Waffles.
Oh, come on, you know.
Waffles.
Waffles.
It's not funny.
Waffles. 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 Waffles.
Waffles. Waffles. Waffles. Waffles. Waffles.
There you go.
Well,
that's for you, Chris.
Wow. Well, thank you.
You enjoyed that.
didn't sound massively sincere, that, did it?
My son was sitting watching cartoons this afternoon, and I was in the kitchen messing about, and I heard that come on the TV, and I nearly fell on the floor laughing. It was incredible, and I thought, if I don't play this tonight for Chris, I'm going to regret it forever.
Well, thank you very much. That's a send-off I needed, so I appreciate
Lovely
that.
Lovely stuff. You look after yourself, mate. You take care, yeah? Likewise. Give us 3 rings when you get in, all right?
Cheers, guys.
Try.
See ya. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, Harry's sponsors, Pod on the Tyne. As a listener to the podcast, you can start shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. Support our podcast and get your set delivered to you, including a razor handle, 5 blade cartridge, foaming shave gel, and travel blade cover. And going to harrys.com, Pod on the Tyne. Right now, we'll get you that trial pack. That's harrys.com/Pod on the Tyne. How come I have to read these all the time? Why can't we get George to do one of these sometime? George, you're the one who's used these Harry's razors.
My cheeks have never been smoother. I can do that.
Wonderful.
If you want me to do that, I'll just clip that. Here we go. Harry's razors. My cheeks have never been smoother. That's all right. I'd buy a razor. I'd buy that razor.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Definitely, definitely. Right, now it's just us. What are we going to say about?
We could talk about the good match.
Let's do that.
Chris sounded grumpy. Do you not think he sounded really grumpy? I think he's tired.
Yeah, he mustn't have got sausage this week. That's what it is.
No, he's got work to do as well, so I know that feeling. But I tried to take on the light role, and he was the sort of grumpy one there.
Yeah,
I love
kind of switched.
Song.
It's like Freaky Friday. You've switched positions, haven't
you? Sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, Sheffield United game on Sunday. That was all right, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. I mean, well, it wasn't brilliant.
First half was turgid.
It was adequate, and I'm really quite excited about that. The first half was turgid, and then you know they were good, and you could see why that system kind of works a lot better and suits them. And yeah, I mean, I think certainly my response to it was sort of tinged by the relief that we were talking about earlier. But they look good. You know, they actually look decent. And there is, you know, that's the way forward. It didn't work so well against Villa. They did look tired. And they, as you say, they looked leggy. But, you know, and so he's going to have to kind of freshen it up, I think, at the weekend. Or at least I would expect that. But... they found a way of playing finally this season that at least allows their forward players to kind of get forward and, you know, that sort of provides that bit of attacking spark, I thought.
I mean, it's going to be massively important, the way things are at the minute and the situation we're in with the five substitutes and the climate, the additional heat and stuff like that, that squad is used to its full potential, and, you know, potential injuries and stuff like that are going to be coming in and happening. And we're just going to have to rotate. I mean, he started the same team tonight as he did against Sheffield United. And on one hand, you would say, well, they won, so why would you change a winning formula? But on the other hand, you think, well, maybe a couple of those players looked a little bit tired tonight, even in the first half. So it might have been worth freshening things up a little bit before the game.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that, I have to say. I mean, certainly in the normal scheme of things, you would say, you know, well, I mean, perhaps not in the modern era quite so much, but, you know, certainly back in the day, you would say you don't change your winning team, or there's no reason to change your winning team. That isn't sort of the case anymore, because football has become so much more of a squad game. You know, for me, once they've won against Sheffield United, Man City should really be the priority. And
absolutely,
you know, so I did sort of think he might switch things around a bit. I'm a bit concerned to have heard Pep Guardiola speak this week about him prioritising the cup game, because obviously they can't win the league. So in that sense, it's not surprising. But so that fills me with, well, I mean, come on, I was always going to be feeling trepidation before a home game against Man City, because you just would. But yeah, so we'll have to see how things play out in the next kind of 24, 48 hours, because of course, who came off in that game? Hayden came off and Matt Ritchie came off, and they look to be struggling a little bit. So hopefully they're okay, because they are such important components in the team.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how good was Hayden on Sunday, mind, against Sheffield United? He just about his business, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Just no nonsense.
I don't have to explain my love of Isaac Hayden to
no, you don't.
Our listener, as you referred to them at the start of the show. I hope there's more
dear
than one.
Listener.
I just thought he was great. I mean, he's such a modest lad. You know, he sort of refers to himself as a work in progress and things like that. But he's come on. I mean, he has come on so much in the last sort of 18 months, 2 years. And I just thought it was a really good performance, and that sort of had a bit, you know, he's a defensive midfield player. He's not going to go up the pitch and do a mazy dribble and score a goal, but he provides John Joe Shelvey's legs for him, which is important in the team. And he offers more than that, but he, you know, he does, when he's kind of playing well, you see that sort of Arsenal background in him, you know, that he's comfortable on the ball and he knows what to do with it and he rarely wastes it. Even if he's not doing something sort of spectacular with it. I love him as a footballer, and I just think I think he's been very underrated, and he is, the fact that he's a smashing fella on top of that is, you know, who has his own story of finding things very difficult here, but then, you know, but also being very appreciative of the club and kind of falling in love with it in a way too. And I'm really pleased he's still here. He has only got a year left on his contract, and I know we've all been thinking a lot about people like Matty Longstaff and those others who fall out of contract. I don't know, but I hope that the club, in spite of the sort of strange circumstances at the moment, are thinking about him too.
Yeah, I would love to think that there'll be an offer there for him to stay on. I mean, he's only 25. He's still got a good few years in his legs, and he could be developing even better in the next couple of years. Developing even better, that's a ridiculous thing to say, Taylor.
No,
he could develop
even
more. He could develop even more over the next couple of years, and he could become a really important player for us. I mean, he already is. There was times on Sunday when he was popping up in the left-back position to put in tackles covering Danny Rose, and then 5 minutes later popping up in the right-back position to cover Javier Manquillo. He does the donkey work and the dirty stuff that you don't see, and he's not fashionable, and he doesn't, he's not flashing anywhere. But every team who's ever done anything needs one of those players, don't they? They need a grafter, and they need a guy who's just going to, you know, forego all of the glitz and the glamour and the, you know, screamers from 40 yards and dribbling past five players to just do the hard yards and put the work in. And I think he's shown himself to be a fantastic servant for Newcastle over the last, you know, the last few years. He's a wonderful player, and I really do hope he stays.
Hello, I'm James Richardson, host of the Totally Football Show, now part of the Athletics Podcast Network. We're going to be here following all the action as the 2020 football season reaches its belated conclusion. And if you're an Athletics subscriber, you can now hear exclusive ad-free versions of our show on the Athletic app. And don't worry, if you're not a subscriber, you can still listen to us for free with the occasional word from our sponsor by searching for The Totally Football Show on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual podcast places. The Totally Football Show with me, James Richardson, still totally free and now totally ad-free on The Athletic.
Looking ahead to Man City on Sunday as well, it's going to be a difficult game, as we know. They're a fantastic team. They've got some real quality in that squad. And we've got a few injuries now as well, by the looks of it, coming off the back of tonight. What do you think is going to be the approach on Sunday? Is it going to be all out and go for it, or do you think it's going to be a little bit more reserved and maybe try and hit City on the break?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult. It's difficult to know. I mean, I sort of thought after Sunday that that perhaps, you know, against Villa there would be a more aggressive approach, but Newcastle were just so passive at the start of the match. Against a team like City, you don't often get the choice. I mean, so saying, you know, we'll take them on can often be a recipe for disaster. And you know, it's one of those games. You know, Newcastle have actually got a pretty decent record against them recently. In relative terms, but it's the kind of game where you do have to be, you know, you do have to, everybody has to be at 100% and everybody has to concentrate 100%, because you know that if you attack them, you leave yourself so vulnerable behind. You also know that they press so high, and so although, you know, that does give an opportunity for a ball to St Maximin, for example, or to Almiron, because they have the pace and trickery to take advantage of it, you also know that one mistake in that position and then City have the ball right up the pitch, and you're probably in trouble. Trouble at that point. Yeah. And so, you know, it's all very well saying take them on, but you just sometimes don't get the choice against a team like City. I mean, Newcastle have shown, though, that they're capable, you know, that they are capable of soaking up pressure and, you know, that being a tactic, and, you know, hitting City on the break can work. But everybody has to be up for it and at it. I think it does become more difficult in an empty stadium, don't you? I mean, I just think it does. We just have to think about what the atmosphere would have been like this weekend.
Oh, it would have been banging. It would have been great.
You know, it'd have been so exciting, and everyone would have been up for it. The pressure of the league would have been taken away. It might have been a slightly different crowd, because it's a cup game, and you know, we'd have all been at the pub and, well, I wouldn't have been because I'm a very professional journalist. I'd have been sipping from the hip flask that I carry into this. Oh, shit, no. you know, and we'd have been, you know, we'd have been absolutely up for it, and it won't be like that. And so I am sort of much more fearful about it and, you know, how easy it is to sort of maintain that level of concentration when it is in that sort of surreal environment. I don't know.
There has been talk, though, this week and last week as well, before we started these games without the crowds, that it could potentially help some of our players. It could potentially kind of lift that the monkey off their back, so to speak, of the pressure of a boiling St James's Park. And I don't know, is that something that you would kind of give any heed to? Would you think maybe it would help them not having the pressure of the crowd there?
I don't think so. And I just don't sort of... I don't accept that premise from the start. I mean, you know, if you come to Newcastle and don't enjoy the pressure of playing in front of 52,000 people, then there's something wrong with you. It's not a pressure, that's a privilege. And it's, you know, okay, fine. On days when it goes bad, it can be a heavy privilege, if you like. It can be tough because it's a lot of people and it's a lot of people scrutinising you, and it's you know, there are days when the atmosphere at St James's feels heavy, and it can feel heavy with foreboding. And I think it's also ingrained in so many of us to think that when it's done, you know, we can smell when something's going wrong because we're so familiar with it.
Yeah.
But equally, on those days when it's, you know, when it's alive, it's a force of nature arena, and it's incredible and it's beautiful. And I don't think, to be honest, I look at this team and I don't think that's really issue.
No,
I don't think I just don't think that's an issue. And perhaps for the player it might have been. It would be somebody like Jillinton, possibly. Okay, fine. Yeah. So we all know now when he gets the ball, we're all going, oh God, please do some, oh for God, you know. But I haven't particularly noticed that changing. I mean, I know he scored against Sheffield United, but I haven't noticed his sort of tension particularly lifting just because there's no crowd there. And so I think that's a bit of a... I personally think that's a bit of a red herring. I mean, surely you want to play in front of a big crowd. That's why you joined the club in the first place.
I was listening to TalkSport the other day in the car, and I heard a really interesting interview with Mikel Antonio, who plays for West Ham, and he was saying one of the problems that we have now as players is that we can't ignore the manager and pretend we haven't heard him. Which I thought, you kind of get away with anything now. You know,
their manager is David Moyes. Sorry. Well, that's true. Let's not forget that. So.
Speaking of gaffers, one more thing I want to mention to you and talk to you about before we finish up. Steve Bruce took a lot of stick this season, I would say, at times, and some of it unfair, some of it, you know, probably a little bit close. And I think, you know, has he done a job now where we can say, Steve, he's done a fantastic job, and he's should have credit for what he's done this season. At times, the football has been horrific, but look at where we are in the league. Look at the points we've got. And look at what we've achieved, and I think it's time to is it time to start giving Steve Bruce some credit, George?
Well, I mean, I think we've been in that position for a while now, and I mean, there are some people who would say that he should never have come to the club in the first place, and there are some people who just won't and wouldn't accept that he's kind of good enough for the club. I mean, we've talked a lot about this kind of stuff this season. I wrote a piece quite near the start of the season where I actually asked him, I kind of tried to reflect some of this sort of very emotive language that's used about him. And I approached him just before a press conference and said, are you a clown? Are you a chump? Are you useless? Yeah, I can't remember what the other word was. And of course, he very nearly punched me in the face,
but fair enough.
But he knew what I was trying to say, and knew what I was trying to do. And the point really that I was trying to make was that you can't manage in the Premier League for as long as he has and not know what you're doing and not be okay at your job. And that isn't to say that he's the best manager in the world. It isn't to say that he's as good as the man he's replaced. But it is just to say that there's a level of competence there, which I think, you know, we should recognise and accept. And, you know, sometimes you can't avoid the evidence of your eyes, and the football for long periods this season has been awful and it's regressed in some ways. But you have to look at the league table and you have to look at the points total. And if a manager deserves stick when the team loses games, then the manager deserves at least a modicum of credit if they don't lose and if they win. And I kind of wrote when he joined the club, when I was still at the Times, I said, I wish he hadn't. You know, I wish he hadn't joined the club at this moment. I've known him for a long time. And, you know, I wouldn't want him to sort of be chewed up by this experience. You know, I hope that, you know, I just sort of hope that people sort of can say that, all right, well, the way things could have gone this season could have been much, much worse. And the fact that it hasn't been much, much worse, you know, is warrant of recognition and just saying, okay, thanks for what you've done this season. I just think that, you know, that's enough. I'm not trying to say that he would be the man to lead Newcastle into a bright new era. Not that that's my, you know, decision to make, but I just think, you know, I would like, if and when he leaves the club, for him to feel welcome to come back and not feel that he's been sort of battling against, you know, having to kind of battle against the club at the same time as trying to manage it. I mean, I think it has been a bruising experience for him, but the table is a very powerful argument in his favour. And I just think we should say, you know, nice one. Thanks very much.
Absolutely. I mean, I was one of the people when he got the job who thought, what are we doing bringing Steve Bruce in? I always felt like, you know, any other club in the Premier League, would they have appointed him? Any forward-looking club, would they have appointed him, you know? But this is Newcastle United, and it's a different beast to a lot of those other clubs. And it was kind of, the guy was available, and we needed the manager. And he came in, and I was disappointed with that after. And I think, to be honest, having gone from Rafa Benitez to Steve Bruce, I think I was always going to be disappointed with who came in. I don't think it would have made a blind bit of difference who got that job. I think I would have still been disappointed. But what I have to say is I've warmed to him massively this season. There's been times when, like you say, the football's been awful. But as a bloke and as a guy doing a job and as a coach, I have to say I think he's done well. I'm not sure if he's the man to lead Newcastle into a bright future, like you say. But you can't not take your hat off to him this season. He's done the job. He's got those players playing.
The one thing I hate is this sort of constant comparison with Rafa as well. I mean, fine, you know, when one goes, another comes in, you know, you sort of do it by human nature. But it's like, you know, you've got this sort of story being told, whether it's, you know, pundits kind of almost trying to sort of lecture Newcastle fans about what they're watching with their own eyes. And they're kind of saying, you know, oh, Bruce's done a better job than Rafa. He's, you know, he's much better. Rafa was terrible. And it's like a sort of rewriting of history. And the point is, you can't compare consecutive managers over a consecutive season. I mean, if you've been in the Premier League for 3 years, you should be better than when you came into the Premier League in the first place. I mean, that's what happens. A team comes in, and if Newcastle was a normal club and a kind of massively forward-thinking club, you get up, you stay up, and you start building and you start building. So,
progress,
you know, progress. So Newcastle should be better. And Newcastle spent 60 million quid in the summer. Now, they happen to spend 40 of it on Gillington. And so that's both, you know, that. I mean, in some ways, you can say that, you know, Newcastle are a worse team. They've spent a lot of money, but they lost most of their goals. And in some ways, should we be giving Steve Bruce credit for actually navigating a way path through this season, in which most of it, I don't want to say they've been playing with 10 men, but they haven't been playing with a centre forward, and they've got to where they are, and they've had to find a way to get through games. And although it's been really horrible to watch for long spells of that, they've done it. And, you know, that is enough, surely, for us just to say, cheers, pal.
If you had a fiver on Newcastle for Sunday, George, where would your money go? The Newcastle win on Sunday for the FA Cup? Go on, stick your neck out.
Go on. 5-0. Who would I do? What would I do?
Isaac Hayden hat-trick.
Isaac Hayden, I'd probably put... Yeah, that is what I would do, actually, because I'm a sentimental bettor, so I'm therefore a terrible bettor. So it's like I would bet on Isaac Hayden, first goal scorer, and probably get odds of about 90 to 1, and then, of course, waste my fiver.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, George. And thanks to Chris as well. He is long gone. There's a good chance he's just in bed now, tucked up.
Probably. What a lovely thought. Cradling
every chance. Yes, thanks very much for listening, and we shall speak to you soon. Don't forget to get onto theathletic.com/Newcastle pod for a 40% discount. Look after yourselves, and we shall talk to you next week. Cheers, George.
See you later.